Coming up on Golf Today, a five-way playoff, a flub chip, and a grandstand as a target. We have all the wild details from the LPGA's first major of the season. And Mao Saigo of Japan survived the madness to win the Chevron for her first LPGA victory and said afterwards she's ready to try and win the next four majors as well. And the long wait for Ben Griffin and Andrew Novak is over. The duo paired like red beans and rice to win the Zurich Classic of New Orleans for PGA Tour win number one. Should Captain Keegan give the boys a look for Bethpage? Find out next on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
She becomes the fifth LPGA Tour major champion from Japan. She's the eighth player to earn her first LPGA Tour win at the Chevron Championship, and it's a big jump in the Rolex rankings, all the way up to 13th from 37th place. You know, Damon, it was, to me, that was enormously entertaining for the last hour of play, and I guess that ought to be a significant metric in terms of the product any golf tour produces, that entertainment for the fans, entertainment for the viewers, ought to matter. It certainly mattered there. I think there are a lot of other shortcomings in the event that are obscured by the entertainment, but nobody can say that was not an exciting and entertaining finish to that tournament.
Oh, I was at the edge of my seat for the last hour on Sunday. I watched a lot of golf all of last week. I love this major championship. I love the history. I love the winners of this championship, whether it's Kari Webb, go back to Annika, you know, Morgan Pressel, our colleague, Inbee Park has won, Patty Tavitanikit has won. It deserves to be a special, wonderful kickoff. And I think that there were some shortcomings, as you said. I think some of the best players in the world were shortchanged. The pace of play, the pro-am, the grandstand. Come on. It can be better and should be better. You have the dinner. Do a dinner. For the Chevron people, put that grandstand farther back away from the green. The pace of play was slow. You got drops on the 72nd hole of a major championship. The women deserve better. They deserve better.
Yeah, the pro-am we discussed earlier last week, certainly with Bethann Nichols as well, and I get that that's just testament to the economic reality of what the LPGA Tour is dealing with, the need to have those kind of built-in client events that other major championships don't have, but four of the five women's majors do. The pace of play was atrocious, and the LPGA has recently introduced a new pace of play policy. They need to start getting more aggressive with it. And to be fair to the LPGA Tour, they're a hell of a lot better than the PGA Tour are when it comes to addressing slow play. But it's not a good advertisement, and it's not good competitive behaviour for other players. And Arya Jutanugarn was in a group with Carlotta Seganda, who is chronically one of the slowest players on the LPGA Tour.
L-E-T,
I don't think those things are unrelated.
LPGA, both. she's been you know, penalized on both tours.
And it's also an issue, I think. It was a sparsely attended event. And there needs to be more effective marketing within the local community to try to better engage the local audience. And I'm not saying that's an easy thing to do. It's clearly a difficult thing to do, but it needs to be more of a focus for this tournament, because it's a quality of field and it's a history of this tournament that deserves a better attendance. And, you know, these things are always cyclical. It's finding its identity after it left 50 years in the California desert.
It's the third year.
But it does need to show more of an effort in terms of the organization of this tournament. The grandstand, I'm totally with you on that. I get that it's part of professional golf, having a grandstand 10 feet off the back of the green.
That the players are purposely aiming toward.
Which you see Ari here. And that's also an advantage, frankly, for players who have the distance to get there in two, because anyone else who has to lay up and has a wedge in their hand doesn't have the backstop benefit that we saw there. And, you know, it was an issue out in Palm Springs as well over the years, which our colleague Bethann Nichols memorably referred to as the Great Wall of Dinah. And they attempted to address that, not entirely successfully, in the last couple of years out there as well. But I do think it's an unfair advantage. And it just seems to diminish the the ask of the best players in the world on the final hole, that hit a quality shot. Don't rely on a backstop.
A quality shot that requires the utmost attention and precision. And this is where all the years of practice and short game, long game, and childhood dreams come down to that hole, and to have it be so arbitrary as to where the ball kicks off the grandstand, guys dodging the ball, do you get a drop from the sprinkler head or not? What's the lie like?
And also,
that bad. I mean, this is the players deserve better. We as viewers deserve better. I don't, no one can compete with the Masters tournament. Yeah. But this is supposed to be the LPGA's version, and for decades and decades it was. And maybe I'm speaking as a California native who grew up 2.5 hours from Mission Hills, but doggone it, that was special every year. I don't know if it's a calendar thing. You had Nelly talking about having to fly from L.A. and not getting to practice. She took some of the blame herself, didn't practice as much on Wednesday as maybe she thought she should. She was tired, but they had the pro-am. It's just, they're building the plane while it's in the air. And this is the third year in Houston. And I wanted to give them some grace for the first couple of years. My point is that these players, Lilia Vu, Nelly Korda, Lydia Ko, they deserve the best. These are the best of the best. They deserve a better stage to show off their skills.
Well, unfortunately, Chevron is based in Houston and not based in Palm Springs, which is why we were at the Woodlands. I get all of that. And in some ways, that backboarding with the bleachers may actually have inadvertently exposed an obvious weakness that Aria Jutanagan has with the putting, because, or the chipping, I should say, because if she had been farther back, if the bleachers were farther back, she would have been probably forced into something closer to a higher flop shot or a little longer golf swing than she was there. That, everyone who's ever played this game knows what they saw yesterday. That was a yip. And we've all had it. And it's just happened. It was excruciating to watch one of the best players in the world suffer that in that particular moment. We've seen Tiger Woods, arguably the best who's ever played the game, suffered chronically if you go back a decade. And that wouldn't have happened, perhaps, if she had been farther back, if those bleachers are another 10 or 15 feet back. Then she has to take a longer swing. She's taken a higher lofted shot in there. And one thing we saw Tiger do repeatedly at the Masters when he came in, when he was suffering from chipping issues, is that once you start to move it towards closer to a flop shot or a higher pitch shot, then even people who are suffering from chipping woes can deal with a shot like that. And I think that shot at least partially owed to the fact that the bleachers were there as a backstop. It was advantageous on shot two. I think it really hurt her on shot three.
Delicate, nervy shot that moment required. And if the grandstands were 10 yards farther back, okay. But they shouldn't be that decisive in determining the outcome and having the players say, okay, well, it's a few yards from the green. It just, listen, it's not an LPGA problem. I mean, this has happened in the men's game as well. We've seen players, you know, hitting it all over, you know, drivable par fours and put it up there in the grandstand. It's just to me, it's too much bumper cars, too much miniature golf, too kooky, too fluky. And on a 72nd hole of a major championship, I just didn't like seeing it. The time it took with the drop and the officials, just that's not how it should be decided. Sparse is better. Move them back. Let's have the green be where it should be and not be a function of anything bouncing off of a great blue monster.
Well, we're going to be keeping talking about this for the rest of the show because Paige McKenzie and Bethan Nichols are going to be joining us later. Well, there was some actual team golf being played this weekend. You know, the kind that actually involves foursomes and four balls. The bros were in the bayou. Ben Griffin, Andrew Novak. They got the win at the Zurich Classic of New Orleans, the only team event on the PGA Tour. We're going to see how they got it done. That's coming up next.
Back on golf today, a couple Sundays ago, 30-year-old Andrew Novak fell just shy of picking up his first career win on the PGA Tour. Why? This guy. Justin Thomas in the playoff, the RBC Heritage on Hilton Head Island. Great moment for JT. Learning experience for Andrew Novak. Grew up in Raleigh, went to Wofford College. We had another chance, another bite at the apple this week playing alongside his good buddy Ben Griffin. They live on St. Simon's. They've worked out together. Eamon played a lot of money games. So this was the 17th hole yesterday. Ben Griffin.
This was a decisive and unlikely birdie putt, but that turned out to be the winning
effort gave him a one-shot edge over the Højgaard twins in this putt for the victory.
I loved that Griffin was kind of spinning around like Jim Valvano back in 83, looking for someone to hug, looking for his partner. There he was, Andrew Novak. Neat moment for them. Both had two runner-up finishes on the PGA Tour before they were able to break through yesterday in NOLA. And look at their backgrounds, very similar resumes in terms of number of starts and top tens. You see the world rank as well and the FedEx Cup rank. Big moment for both players yesterday. Let's hear from the champions.
I think for both Andrew and I, it kind of felt like it was only a matter of time out here. We both put ourselves in the mix a bunch, you know, especially this season, but even going back to last season. Just a lot of hard work between both of us. And for me personally, it means the world to finally get it paid off, or to finally get it done. And so couldn't think of a better guy to get it done with right here with Andrew.
Perfect. And Andrew, coming off the emotion of being in that playoff in Hilton Head last week, how are you able to reset, refocus, and put together another strong performance and get the job done?
Yeah, I played well last week down the stretch, which was good to look back on. Like, that was a positive. There have been times down the stretch where I've had chances and haven't played particularly well. So I took some positives into this week. You never really know when you're going to get your first one, but we put ourselves in position again. Luckily, I had Ben there for me today, and he carried down the stretch, and so exciting to get our first win together.
You know, Ben's talked about before, you know, taking a day job a few years ago and not sure if he'd keep doing this grind. To then do it together, because you've known each other this long, but also to see where he's kind of fought through and your own fight, just kind of, I guess, could you take me through that feeling of doing this together with two guys who had to really fight to get here?
We've done a lot of work together at home. We've seen each other work. We've seen the time and effort that each other have put in. I think it really is full circle that now we win together. It seems like a movie, really. Like, it seems like a movie script. Like, it's not real, but I mean, it's just perfect how it all came together. Ben was, he was on Korn Ferry when I was on PGA Tour at first, but we'd still be at home. He'd be putting in the work. Like, I kind of knew he was going to bounce back, once he had his little sabbatical. Like, when he came back, like, the mindset was there, the focus was there. Like, I don't, like, that kind of like locked you in almost. Like, got your priorities like back in order, I guess. And I mean, since then, I mean, that you didn't last very long on the Korn Ferry Tour. You're right out here where you belong.
Well, before we get to break, let's take a look at the latest Comcast Business Tour Top 10, which rewards reliable and consistent play throughout the season. With that win on Sunday, Andrew Novak moves up from 15 to 6. Ben Griffin moves from 47 to 21. Rory McIlroy still in the top spot ahead of the number one young American of his generation, Justin Thomas.
All right, Amy, when Golf Today returns, world number one Nelly Korda's title defense got off to a tough start at the Chevron, but she did rebound to finish in the top 15. But what would she change from her week? Find out next on Golf Today. Highlights from Nelly at the Chevron, opening round, three over after three straight bogeys. Now at the par four, sixth.
This long one for par. That also slides by. Fourth straight bogey. She finished that opening round, five over, 77.
Having to fight now on day two. This is the par four, ninth for par. Okay, makes it. She made the cut. Shot 68 in the second round. I mean, but the heart had to be beaten a little bit.
Made a little headway in the third round. Here on the par 5, 13th, this is her third shot. Comes very close. Putting this one down.
Oh, get legs.
She made her birdie. First time under par for the week.
How about the final round? This is the par 4, 11th. Looking for a little heat with this club.
This got her to 2 under, which is where she finished the tournament in a tie for 14th place. And let's take a look at those four rounds. Starts with 77. She was a lot better on the subsequent 3 days. After her final round, she spoke about some changes she would have made in retrospect.
It's just really tough with a 6 p.m. finishing time in LA on the West Coast and then having to get to a major. Like, it's hard to be fresh on a Monday. So I just wish I maybe got 18 in, but, we got rained out on Wednesday. It was kind of tough. I was off early on Thursday, so wanted to prioritize my rest. But at the end of the day, I mean, you just kind of have to roll with the punches and you have to continue learning. And I just played the pro-am of the front nine, so I didn't get to chip, putt, see how the greens were really releasing, since with this new pro-am protocol where we can't chip and putt anymore. So not having that kind of sucked, but at the end of the day, I did have the chance to play in the afternoon on Wednesday and I didn't take it, so it's on me.
We're joined now by Paige McKenzie, who is part of the broadcast team on site at the Chevron Championship. Paige, I'm curious what your reaction is to Nelly's comments, and do you think she leaves the Chevron feeling positive because of the fight that she showed in those last three rounds, or do you think she still leaves with a lot of frustrations?
I don't even know what to take from the comments, to be honest, Eamon. The fact that they finished at 6 p.m. in L.A., well, that's on you to play the week before. If you wanted to play your way into a major, you knew what the finish time was. And frankly, it's a great finish time. It's a 9 p.m. Eastern primetime finish TV window for the LPGA Tour. So I know that's not the problem. I think maybe she's just reflecting on how she could have managed it slightly differently moving forward. So I'm sure she's going to learn from that. But I couldn't really pinpoint where the complaint was, whether it was on any external factors or it was on herself. I think as it relates to the golf tournament, she looked like she was sleepwalking a bit through the first round. There was something that was just off. It didn't seem like it was Nelly Korda. So I think the biggest takeaway from that week was how she fought so hard, especially on Friday, to give her a chance to play the weekend and then continuing some decent play throughout the weekend. So I think that would be the biggest takeaway for Nelly Korda.
Yeah, fatigue seemed to be part of her story. How about former world number one, two-time major champ, Arya Jutanugarn? Paige, in a past life, I would have cornered you in Orlando and asked for a watch and learn on what happened with the short game there. I've seen it. I've done it myself. Hands too far ahead. Bounce not exposed. What happened to Arya Jutanugarn on that final hole?
It was very bizarre. It was very bizarre. And actually, if you go back to the tee shot even, how this all broke down, I was with the group, so I was watching. On the tee on the 18th hole, she mishit the shot. Look at this tree standing right in front. It went through the branches to even give herself the opportunity to go for this in two. So a misexecution on the tee ball that ended up being rewarded. And then the alternative happened on the second shot. When she stood over the second shot, she was talking with her caddy on where to aim. What was the target? She said, the guy in the back, that's what we're aiming at. My call on the ground was, that guy better move. This was a perfectly executed shot for what she was trying to do. As it relates to the chip shot, I walked up, I saw the lie. It actually looked pretty clean directly behind the ball. I was a little surprised that she flubbed it because the ball was exposed on the right side. It was completely covered on the left side, but she hit so far behind it. That's what caused the club to jump into the ball. As you can see right here, you can see the ball is like decently exposed on the left side, but hit so far behind it, was unable to advance it. So I don't know if that's an answer for you, Damon, but that was my analysis of what happened on those three shots.
We have seen Arya be somewhat fragile before. Even in her winning moments, Paige, she had a 7-shot lead in the U.S. Open, ended up winning, excuse me, in a playoff. Do you think something like this is going to have a lasting scar tissue with Arya, or is she the kind of personality that can put something like this behind her and move forward?
I think she'll be able to put it behind her and move forward. What's interesting about Arya is I'm not quite certain what exactly motivates her. I know she gets a lot of joy from seeing the kids out watching her. I know she gets a lot of satisfaction for being a positive role model. But she's not the cutthroat competitor outwardly. She's a sweetheart at her core. And she finds motivation in trying to serve others. So for this, I'm sure this is going to sting. How can it not? In reality, she had very little to do to walk away with the trophy on that final hole. But I think she's been through so much in her career. You think back when she was 17, she triple bogeyed the final hole of LPGA Thailand to ultimately lose to NB Park. That could have cratered her career before it even really began. And then you mentioned the playoff where she lost a 7-shot lead, but then ultimately had enough gumption to go on and win. This is a player that's been through the highs and the lows that this game has to offer.
Paige, I love the LPGA. As you know, I watch it religiously. I love this major championship. It's the kickoff to major championship season, the LPGA. The grandstand on the 72nd hole, it bothers me. It troubles me. This is the third year in Houston. We've got pace of play issues, drops, and a wall affecting the outcome of a major. Am I overreacting, or was that grandstand too close to that green?
Well, okay, let's break it down. What about the wall do you dislike? Do you feel like it did change the outcome? Do you feel like players shouldn't be able to use it? Do you think they would have changed their strategy if the grandstand wasn't there?
I think it was farther back. I think if it was not, I think...
You don't think they'd go for it?
Oh, I think they would.
I don't think it changes the player's strategy.
I think it changes the result, though, when they're able to aim at the grandstand, know they could potentially take a drop, and then have that. I just feel like you shouldn't have a wall behind the 18th green where the bounce is rub of the green. Am I wrong about that?
I think there's a trade-off. There's a trade-off if you want fans to be involved. And the environment when there was a five-person playoff, or last year when Nelly was going for five in a row, the environment around that green was so substantial because of the player or the fans that were allowed to sit right there in the bowl around the green. So I think there is the trade-off. Yes, it can influence play. But to your point you made earlier in the show, this is not an LPGA issue. It's not a major specific issue. You go back to 1999 and John Vandeveld. His second shot hit the grandstand and bounced back over the burn. Had that grandstand not been there, he would never have been in the burn. And then you go to just a couple weeks ago, Andrew Novak on the 16th hole. Oh, shoot, what tournament was that? The avocado hole. He hits the grandstand. Terrible shot.
Yep.
And it ultimately bounces on the green. This is part of the professional game, whether we like it or not. And I think that's the trade-off for having fans in grandstands.
Is there an advantage, Paige, though, to players who do have the power to put themselves back there, to use that as a backstop versus, say, a Lindy Duncan, who didn't actually have that, and suddenly she's playing her third shot from the fairway and a lot more is demanded in some ways in terms of a safety net from her third shot versus a second shot from a longer player?
Yeah, I think the alternative, of course, is not so much a three-shot hole versus a two-shot hole. It's that two-shot hole is in an easier chip shot from directly above the green than what would have been a 15-yard release. And I don't know that. I truly don't, because I've never seen this hole without a grandstand there, so it's difficult for me to judge how challenging that longer pitch would be. But to me, that's the differentiation. Is how different does this hole play for that two-shotter versus the three-shotter? Because, again, I don't think it changes the decision-making for the longer players. They will go for it whether there's a backstop there or not, because there is enough space between the back of the green and what is a cart path, which is restricting where that grandstand is sitting.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what the good folks at Chevron and the LPGA decide what to do, whether to change anything for 2026 or not. It did not take away from the drama, that is for sure. Paige, thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
All right, our conversation continues. Golf Today roundtable on tap when we return, plus a check-in on Rory McIlroy's week at the Zurich, his first PGA Tour start since slipping on that green jacket in Augusta. We are back after this. We are back on Golf Today. Never get tired of seeing these images as Rory McIlroy completed the career Grand Slam earlier this month at the Masters Tournament. Just the sixth man in history to do so, and now a five-time major champion. Get that green jacket. Now back in action this week, the Zurich, New Orleans with his buddy, Shane Lowry. This was the opening round from distance.
Walk-off eagle. That was enough to tie the lead at the time.
I thought they were going back-to-back. I'll just say it now. All right, it's the final round now. This is Shane.
Going in for birdie.
Not a victory. Still had a lot of fun with his buddy Rory, and after the round, the two spoke with Rex Hager.
Bit of a celebration on 18, Rory. I know this isn't the finish you wanted, but how would you characterize the week?
Yeah, it's been a fun week. You know, I think when we went back out after the delay, we felt like we still had a good chance. And You know, we didn't make birdie on 11, and then we bogeyed 13 again for the second time this week. So, yeah, just, you know, didn't have any momentum from when we started back up again. And, you know, it was difficult to just sort of get anything. We noticed the greens got pretty fast and pretty firm after the delay too. So got a little tougher. But, you know, look, overall, it's been a good week. It's always good to team up with this man. And, we've had fun.
Shane, birdie on 18, you certainly look like you were enjoying yourself. Why do you enjoy playing with him so much?
Enjoying myself so much. But no, yeah, look, it's nice. Obviously, look, we came here. I was happy Rory came. It was nice to come and try and defend. I think we did a good job for the most part. And then I think we played all right at the start this today, and nothing really happened for us. And then after the delay, we just went out and, you know, everything that could go wrong went wrong. But I had a great week. I'm happy my man came here this week and, you know, I had a great time and, yeah, it was fun.
Rory, it's been a whirlwind few days. How do you reset for the rest of the season?
Yeah, I got to just take a little bit of time here. It's nice to have a week off. Reset and try to get some practice in. And I feel like it's like two practice weeks coming up in a way with next week at home and then the Truist as well in some ways. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to a couple of days off and just sort of kicking the feet up and trying to recharge the batteries a little bit.
And right now it's time for a Golf Today roundtable. Let's welcome in Todd Lewis and Ryan Lavner. Great to see you, gentlemen. Lav, the Zurich Classic of New Orleans, has it arrived as a team event, kind of breaking up the PGA Tour schedule? Are you buying? Are you all in?
I don't know if I'm all in, but I'm certainly buying the Zurich Classic. And I think one of the biggest benefits, Damon, is that this happens once a year. It does break up the monotony of the PGA Tour schedule, which by and large is 72 holes of stroke play competition. Why I think it works as a one-off on the tour schedule is that there's actually a team component to it. You're relying directly on your teammate. You're directly invested in their success. To me, that's one of the biggest failings of LIV Golf, is that it's a so-called team competition, and yet you don't have it players or teams going head-to-head at all. LIV Golf is essentially college golf, and that you're just adding up the scores and seeing how it stacks up at the end. I think that's a big miss for LIV, but I think it's a benefit for the PGA Tour, even if it's never going to get a great field at this part of the schedule.
Todd, repeatedly throughout the week, we heard all the players and competitors talk about how it was a fun week for them. But in the context of how the public investment fund is apparently wedded to this idea of team golf being a component of the future landscape, do you actually sense any appetite among the players to do this more than just once a year?
Yeah, I kind of echo what Ryan was talking about. If there is a team component, I don't see it to the format that LIV Golf has it. I don't really get the sense, and out on tour, and I know you guys have been out there too, that they, you know, that there is a rah-rah for team golf. Actually, considering what I've been hearing in regards to the negotiations, a lot of the top tier players on the PGA Tour see that as kind of a failing component in regards to the world stage. So I don't really hear that a lot, but I agree with what Ryan said. I mean, look, just last week, my friend and I went out and played an event. We were partners. We played a best ball event and, played miserably, by the way. But I think most golfers that, you know, are out there playing in this great game, they play a team concept and they would like to see the world's best play a four ball, play a foursome contest. So I think it does. I don't think it's a deterrent for the PGA Tour. I think it does benefit in some ways. And it is kind of a cool little blip on the PGA Tour schedule that you can look forward to as a player.
Speaking of the PGA Tour schedule, I think that the Tour Lav, one of the most difficult things it's had to do is find a way to make the Tour Championship truly compelling when you have the players in four major championships. With your reporting, I know you talked to Rex about this as well on your podcast. Are we getting closer to having a Tour Championship that really makes sense and can galvanize the viewer?
It certainly seems like we're getting closer. And Adam Schupak of Golf Week had the report out last week. Although it was short on, you know, facts, it was certainly sort of narrowing down the options. It's not going to be match play, at least in 2025. It's not going to be the starting strokes format either, which has not really been all that well received since it was instituted in 2019. It's clearly a difficult decision. That's why we're now sitting here on the verge of May and they have not come to an agreement of what the Tour Championship is going to look like. And it's such a difficult decision because you're trying to shoehorn two things into one season finale. You're trying to make, if you're the PGA Tour, the biggest spectacle you possibly can, but you also want to crown a season-long championship. I've talked numerous times on this podcast, on the show and on the podcast about how I would separate those two and just have sort of this grand finale, this boondoggle at the end of the season at Eastlake. I think that could be really cool, but I don't think you're necessarily going to find a consensus that really works for everyone, all of the constituents who are in play here. The players, obviously, they have a great grasp of what a good competition is going to look like. They are going to be hesitant to institute any sort of match play because they're playing stroke play all season long. All of a sudden, you're changing your format like they do in NCAA golf to a different format. I don't think that's necessarily going to sit well with the players. That might not be necessarily what TV wants, who's trying to showcase the best product and have the best entertainment for its big money season finale. The sponsors are going to have a different say as well, wanting to make sure the stars stick it out for the remainder of the week at Eastlake. There's so many constituencies, there's so many stakeholders, but time is running out, guys. I mean, we're only 4 months away from the conclusion of the FedEx Cup season. They have to come up with some sort of solution, but it does feel like it's going to be a bridge year to something bigger and better.
Yeah, I'm hearing what Ryan's saying too, and I think the Tour Championship is kind of like golf. It's the pursuit of perfection that is not attainable. You are not going to be able to satisfy the players, the fans, everyone here. There is no perfect formula, but I do credit the PGA Tour and the players, the Player Advisory Council, the PGA Tour Policy Board for listening to a variety of formats and willing to be adjustable. So I like Ryan says, we are kind of running out on time for 2025, but I think that they are moving toward a positive decision-making process. One thing I would like to say is that I feel like there should be better emphasis made on the regular season champion that I really don't think is emphasized enough in what they do prior to those, what is now three events heading into the playoffs.
Speaking of the single season champions or the prominent players on a tour, Ryan, Joaquin Niemann was the winner again on LIV yesterday after yet another no-show in a major championship, finished 29th, I believe, at the Masters. Is it at a certain point detrimental to LIV that this guy, he plays well outside of LIV in smaller events with shallower fields, but when he goes against deeper fields, he doesn't deliver at the same level. Does it become detrimental to LIV that the perception that its best player isn't among the best when he's actually in a deep field?
No, I can certainly see that point. I mean, look, Joaquin Niemann now has 5 wins. He's tied with Brooks Koepka for the most on that circuit. He has 3 wins this year, but I think we're struggling to understand what it actually means. I mean, you could make the very convincing argument that Joaquin Niemann is now the best player on LIV Golf, has supplanted Jon Rahm, at least when you look at his credentials and his resume, and that could obviously be very, very lucrative. But competitively, there's no way to contextualize that and what that means without better performances in the major championships against all of the best players in the world. Joaquin Niemann is obviously really talented. His game travels. He's won on a variety of different countries, on different golf courses, different grasses. He can play all the shots, but there's pressure mounting for Joaquin Niemann, who's now in his mid-20s and has not done anything in the major championships at this point. A player of his caliber to have 0 top 10 finishes in a major championship is bewildering. And I'm sure, you know, Joaquin Niemann is well aware of that. And he's putting more pressure on himself than anyone else to sort of break that streak.
T-Lou, speaking of team golf, I want to spin ahead to the Ryder Cup. More likely to be a player on the United States team this fall, Keegan Bradley or Andrew Novak?
Oh, that is a really good question. If you had asked me a month ago, I would have said, well, Keegan Bradley, of course. But Eamon, you and I were talking about this last week. I have been really impressed with the comfort and confidence that Andrew Novak has been showing over the last month, third, second, first. And granted, I know it was a team event last week or over the weekend, and Ben Griffin did contribute a lot. But when he's in big moments right now, I don't really understand what his switch. Maybe it's just he feels like it's his time. He's feeling like he's been in these situations enough now that he doesn't feel the pressure internally or maybe externally. But he looks like he belongs right now. This is what we've seen the last month. Now he is in all the signature events. There are only a few remaining. He's in generally with his world rankings, going to be in all the major championships remaining on the calendar year. Now is his time to really prove that he belongs not only in the conversation about being on the Ryder Cup team, but maybe getting himself into the top 10 in the official world golf ranking, making a run at the FedEx Cup. He seems to have a really calmness about him, but I really do like the fact that he is willing right now, and I don't know what it is in 4 years now on the PGA Tour, but really wanting to embrace the moment, not stepping away from it, and I think that it's been a big shift for him to make this run.
Speaking of guys who are starting to feel comfortable out there, Ryan, Michael Block in the mix at the PGA Professional Championship. Are the shallow waters of golf social media ready for another Blocky episode?
I don't know. Are they still fighting about the grandstanding and the backstopping that happened at the Chevron Championship? It seems like there's always a story of the day on social media. Last night, it was what happened on the 18th hole. Today, yes, obviously, Blocky mania is going to be taking over, and I can't wait. We're just barely more than an hour away from Blocky mania continuing once again in 2025.
Blocky mania, Quail Hollow, sign me up, boys. This is a lot of fun. Felt like we were around the water cooler. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, boys.
Good to see you. Thanks for having us.
All right, much more golf today, right after this.
If drama is the most important metric for a successful major, then the Chevron Championship delivered on Sunday. But drama isn't all that matters, and Houston left us with a lot to talk about. And not all of it is welcome. Bethann Nichols is here to review the highs and lows of the LPGA's first major of 2025. And a teenager was making noise on the Corn Ferry Tour this weekend. Blades Brown is one of the most exciting young talents in the game. The man who coaches Blades and a host of other top players besides is Justin Parsons, and he'll be in the house. Golf Today continues.
Golf Today.
In incredible fashion, in a playoff, Mau Saigo is a major champ here at the Chevron.
I'm not even sure she can believe it in this moment.
Hour two of Golf Today, Eamon Lynch, Damon Hack. Damon, we've spent a lot of time talking about all of the ancillary drama around the Chevron yesterday, the idea of flub chips and backboarding. But one person in a five-person playoff held their nerve when it mattered, and it was the woman whose face we see on the monitor behind us.
Yeah, LPGA Tour Rookie of the Year 1 year ago. She did keep her head. She kept her game and her wits. I mean, it was a crazy final hour. There was so much going on, so many different possibilities on who would hold firm, and she was the last woman standing, and loved the fact that she said, hey, I'm not done. There are four more major championships on the schedule, and she wants to win them all. I thought that was pretty cool, kind of a little bit of a look ahead to what we might see later on this year.
And it's so rare to actually see a five-person playoff where every single person could have left that playoff. The other four losers in that playoff could have left thinking, I see where my opportunity was here. Yeah. That could have been me with the trophy. It really was just a cigarette paper's width between success and failure out there yesterday.
Well, Mau Saigo joins a wonderful list of winners from Japan to win majors on the LPGA. Smiling Cinderella, Hinako Shibuno, back in 2019. I'll never forget the putt she made, the smile she had. Yuka Sasso, one of the great players in the modern era. Yaka Furue, a year ago at the Evian. Chaku Higuchi, back in 77, the KPMG Women's PGA Championship, and Mau Saigo yesterday in the suburbs of Houston. Golf Week senior writer Bethann Nichols was on site last week at the Chevron and joins us now. Always great to spend time with you, get a little bit smarter about the game. Speaking of Mau, wonderful moment when she jumped into the pond, but I understand that it was a little bit dangerous for her as well. Please explain.
Yeah, it turns out Mau can't swim. And she wasn't the only one in the pond there that couldn't swim. So you had three women jump in the first wave. Mau, along with her manager and a member of the media, and reviewing some of the footage later, and none of the three are very good swimmers. And then you had two trainers and her caddy jump in later, and they just didn't realize how deep it was. And so in the second wave, the men come out, and her caddy, Jeffrey Snow, said that he couldn't break water. He couldn't get up for air because somebody was grabbing on him at every turn that he took, trying to keep their head above water. So thankfully, the trainers helped guide the women back to the dock. You know, it's 5 feet deep around the dock, but then it gets out close to 10 feet deep, which they wanted to make sure no one would get injured on the jump. But, you know, if you can't swim, you know, that can be a scary thing. And you know, you could hear Mao calling for help from the water. I couldn't hear that, but other folks who were in the direction where she was yelling could hear it. And so, you know, I asked her later how strong of a swimmer she is, and she actually said she thought she might drown, and she said it with a smile, but it was stressful out there. They were in distress for sure.
That would be one final indignity that this tournament could actually live without. Beth Ann, all the drama that we saw in the last hour, which was absolutely compelling television, does that obscure bigger issues here? Because we had 5.5 hour runs. We had very sparse crowds out there as well, which suggests that it's perhaps not been effectively marketed to the local community. Is this a tournament 3 years now in Houston that really does need some adjustments?
I definitely think so. I mean, when you know, there was, you know, some interest in it when Nelly was trying to make the cut and she had that great run on Friday. You know, you saw Twitter's kind of come to life, casual golf fans start to get interested a little bit. And then of course on Sunday, things lit up when Ariel almost, you know, whiffed her chip shot there. But other than that, I think I really think there was a Masters hangover in effect for this major. And when I really stopped to think about what it was like before, when the LPGA could claim the status as having golf's first major, there was a great ramp up to the event. And the LPGA definitely needs that ramp up, you know, right ahead of the Masters, you know, where they can claim a little bit of territory. Because once the Masters happens, and of course, this was an exceptional Masters with Rory's victory, but everything kind of feels a little bit, you know, everybody's taking an exhale and not really, you know, thinking about the LPGA. And I think, you know, the LPGA needs to really look at moving this back to March, maybe after the Players' Championship. Of course, a couple hurdles there. They've got to make sure they can find the TV window, but then also maybe adding another full field event to make sure some of the rookies and players who don't have a strong status have a chance to play their way into the year's first major. But I definitely think the LPGA needs to take a hard look at moving this on the calendar. And I also think they need to drastically reduce their ticket prices. I think they need to focus not on trying to make any money at the gate, but really just try to give that atmosphere that there's something exciting going on here, not only on the ground, but for people watching on TV. They need to see a lot of people watching. And I think $50 plus is too much in this economy when you add in parking and concessions.
I don't want to pile on here, but I will. You coined the phrase Great Wall of Dinah back in the day, that wall behind the 18th at Mission Hills. We had another great wall behind the 18th at the club at Carlton Woods, which affected shots throughout the week, but especially on Sunday. Is it too close to that green? Your thoughts on what we saw, Ari Jutanugarn attacking this green in two and hitting almost a ground rule double off the wall.
Yeah, you know, I can't blame the players for the strategy. I definitely think it was the play, because that's what the officials gave you. But it's a bad look, you know? I mean, I don't think it's what, you know, Mao Saigo here, you know, her caddy told me, look, if we needed an eagle, we would have hit 7-wood here. But if the wind had shifted a little bit, it might have come up short. So we just bombed a 3-wood down there, you know? And that just, you know, having a backstop just takes away from the skill of these players. You know, when I look at what Ronnie did, you know, in the playoff hole, and her approach shot was a thing of beauty. The three putt we want to forget about, but my goodness, that second shot. So, you know, I think it does a disservice to the women to set it up this way, because of course that's what they're going to do. That's what you've given them. There's not a lot of room behind there to move it back. So they've either got to make it smaller, build it higher and make it smaller, or move it. I mean, they've got to do something, because I can't imagine. I know this is part of golf. I know this happens at other events. But can you imagine turning on a men's major and you see multiple players in a playoff or coming down the stretch, banging off against a wall time after time after time? I've never seen that happen in a men's major. It shouldn't happen in a women's major.
A strange week for Nelly Korda out there, Bethann. Finished tied 14th after a rough first round. We heard some sound where she's got some complaints about the week. What did you make of Nelly's week?
Yeah, it was definitely a strange week for Nelly. You know, I think, you know, it definitely, she makes a point. It is not easy to get from Texas, from LA to Texas with a time change, you know, finishing late on a Sunday. And when you're a past champion, you have that dinner that night, it really does eat up a lot of your Monday. And so, you know, but I understand why Nelly played in that event. I think it had a large part to do with the fact that she didn't play in it last year, because she won five in a row and then she took some time off. And I, you know, I'm guessing that's probably why she definitely wanted to play this year, given that she pulled out last year. But, you know, when I look at the schedule of the week and the pro-am and everything that's involved, you know, she has some good points. And she also is right to say, look, it was on me for not going back out Wednesday afternoon when the rain stopped and the course opened and practicing again. But she favored rest in that case, because she had an early tee time on Thursday. So, you know, I definitely think, you know, that these are small but important details in the schedule that the LPGA really needs to look at to make sure that the best players have the best chance to do well. And because, you know, they have a lot more on their plate and a lot more is asked of them during a major championship week. So, you know, moving forward, you know, Nelly said, you know, her dad will probably come out to all of her practices. She has the week off, but she, of course, is hosting her junior tournament at Concession. And I think, you know, she's looking forward to getting more time on the golf course, less time on the range, try to play her way into the fields that she wants.
Well, Nelly Korda is the best player in the world. How about Lindy Duncan, who a couple years ago had no status? How much of a great underdog story was she this week in Houston?
Man, what a Cinderella she almost was. You know, a former college player of the year who just really hasn't found her footing, you know, like we thought she would as a pro. And I was talking to her mom on the front nine yesterday, and she said, you know, Lindy's a lot lighter. Can you see the difference? And you can. And I said, well, where's that come from? She said, we've been trying to get Lindy to be less intense for years, but it's something Sean Foley said that finally lightened her up. So I said, Lindy, what did Sean Foley say? And she said, you know, she said, act like the player that you want to be. You know, how would the player that you want to be handle adversity? So, you know, Lindy is a deep thinker. She's an analytical player. She can be really hard on herself, and in trying to problem solve, kind of get a rut of trying to problem solve. And so she's allowing herself now, just in recent weeks, to make mistakes and to be okay with it. And she said, you know, she couldn't have proved the point more this week. She looks back on all the mistakes that she made. This is what she told me after she lost the playoff. I look back at all the mistakes that I made, and look, I still played my way into a playoff. Like, I don't have to be this perfect player, and I don't have to play with this intensity. I can have the playful nature and the joyful nature that I have outside of golf. I'm allowed to do that inside the ropes too. And so I just love this maturing of Lindy Duncan. You know, she's in her mid-30s and she's just finding her stride. And I think it's a great message, you know, that everyone's not on the same timeline.
And it's also a positive thing to leave a playoff loss with that kind of attitude. Do you think Arya Jutanugarn is going to leave with the same attitude, Bethann? Of all the people who leave the Chevron without the trophy, do you think she's going to have the most regrets?
Well, I definitely think she's going to be replaying the shot that none of us will ever forget, because if we're not going to forget it, she's not going to forget it. But I also think of all of the heartbreak and adversity that Arya Jutanugarn has faced over the course of her career, both inside and outside the ropes. And I think this is a mature player who has great perspective, and she will get over this and she will come back from it, because we've watched her do that time and time again. So I do believe her when she says that, you know, she takes some confidence from this week. But, you know, I think it's also going to hurt for a while too. But that doesn't mean that she's not going to, you know, put herself back in contention to win another major. I mean, look at how much talent she has. It's incredible.
This major championship has so many layers and so much drama as well. Beth Ann, one down, four more to go. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, folks, take another look at that final leaderboard from Houston. Now Saigo, it's her first LPGA Tour win, and it's a major championship, winning that five-way playoff. There's Lindy Duncan. You heard Beth Ann talk about her. Here's Lindy's thoughts on the week that was.
That was the loudest I've ever heard on a golf course. The cheering was incredible. And to make a putt like that to get into the playoff, I'll remember forever. And just, you know, walking the fairways, people were chanting, "Go Lindy," and it was really, really fun.
For you, I know you said yesterday it was going to be life-changing no matter what. Can you just put into words what this week has meant to you, what it'll mean to your career, what it means to your confidence heading forward?
Yeah, I mean, top five in a major any week is incredible. You know, to have a chance, feeling the nerves you know, I feel like I have some things to learn about how to handle my swing or, you know, things like that. And I'll reflect on it. And yeah, but what a week. Yeah.
Lindy, this is a big paycheck. I'm wondering how this might help you with your team or other things that you might like to add to help you out as you travel. Will it change your life in any way?
I have not thought about that at all. Honestly, I don't even know. Yeah.
And then just last one for me. If you were to talk to little girls that are like you that just go out and grind every single time, have to be gritty, have to be resilient to get every opportunity that they can, what would you say?
Yeah, that's such a great question. I mean, I really think that is the point of what we're doing. I feel like that's, you know, the purpose that we bring to the game is to just keep moving forward. Don't look back. You can reflect and try to learn, but, you know, don't dwell on it. And even if it may feel like, you know, the wheels are coming off or, you know, golf makes you feel that way a lot. But I think the point of it is to kind of center off of that and just get right back to the process and all of that goes into that, which is there's a lot that goes into that. So, I mean, yeah, the young girls out there, you know, we all have struggles. We all have stuff that we have to face and deal with and don't avoid it. Like, don't run away from it. Just run right through it.
Lindy Duncan, that co-runner-up finish at the Chevron, matching her best career finish on the LPGA Tour, her 12th year on tour. She was the 2012 NCAA Player of the Year as a junior in Durham.
And before we get to break, let's see who's who and race to the CME Globe with the 2024 winner of the race. Gino Thitical is currently in second spot in the rankings behind Hojo Kim. American Angel Yin in the third spot thanks to an early season win. Chevron champion Mai Saigo is in the top five, and two-time major winner Minji Lee rounding out the top 10. Now, Justin Parsons, he coaches veteran major winners and up-and-coming teenagers, and has even tried to help some washed-up golf media guy with a funky swing and a bad attitude. Justin is joining us next to explain where he's been successful, if only with some of his clients. We're back on Golf Today. 17-year-old Blades Brown shot an opening round of 10-under par 61. Corn Ferry Tour's Veritex Bank Championship. That's the lowest round by a player under the age of 18 on either the PGA Tour or the Corn Ferry Tour on record. Brown turned pro in December. He made 9 birdies and an eagle with just 1 bogey at Texas Rangers Golf Club. And here's where he currently finds himself in the early days of his career. 44th on the Corn Ferry Tour points list, where the top 20 will earn PGA Tour cards. He's very close to special temporary membership on the Corn Ferry Tour, which is why he's declined a sponsor exemption to play this week's PGA Tour event, the CJ Cup Byron Nelson, in favour of remaining on the Corn Ferry Tour to try to lock up that card after his T2 finish at the weekend.
And Blades Brown, among several players in the stable of one Justin Parsons, you see major champs like Brian Harman, players who have won on the Corn Ferry Tour, PGA Tour, appeared in Ryder Cups and President's Cups. And there you see at the bottom, one not so successful student, my co-host Eamon Lynch, as Justin Parsons joins us now. Justin, Eamon always likes to whine about coaches that he's fired. Give us the true story. What went wrong? Because I see Eamon take backswings from time to time in the office. He looks like a pretty decent player.
Well, I think, you know, a lot of the guys that have tried to help Eamon have, we've all pretty much told him the same thing, and he doesn't like to hear the same thing, so he just keeps firing someone and going to the next person. But from talking to us, we all pretty much tell him the same stuff.
It's the insubordination that got you fired, Justin, nothing to do with the instruction at this point. Let's talk about one of your more successful relationships as an instructor. You've been working with Blades Brown, obviously that T2 finish, as a 17-year-old at the weekend on the Corn Ferry Tour. How did that relationship come about?
Well, Blades is looked after by Sport 5 that have an association here on the island. His agent, Tommy Real, knew that Blades kind of needed a little bit more strategic direction in the early parts of his professional career. So we kind of got going towards the end of the summer, and he stumbled a little bit. He played really, really well in the summer of 2023, and he found his long game kind of going south a little bit. So, you know, like a lot of young developing players, he's looking at a lot of information. He's looking at a lot of different golf swings and things. So I had to kind of just sort of step in with a few concepts to tidy things up a little bit. And you know, he's a real breath of fresh air. I mean, he's such fun to work with and work for. He's full of enthusiasm. He's a great learner. His mother was an incredible basketball player, and his father is an absolute bundle of energy. So they certainly keep me on my toes. And to be working with a 17-year-old with such promise, you know, it's a big responsibility, but it's a lot of fun.
Speaking of his father, I met Park at Vedanta, where Blades made his first cut as a professional. You mentioned his age, 17. What's the balance of treating him like a professional, which he is, but also kind of putting him on a pitch count, knowing that he's just a teenager still finding his place in the world?
You know, again, I think that is the responsibility of it, Damon. It's a very good question. I think he is a very mature lad who, you know, he'll send me a little screenshot the night before every tournament with exactly what he's going to do. He'll be waking up at this time, and he's going to be having breakfast at this time. He's going to be in the weight room at this time. But kind of coupled with that, there's this infectious, fun-loving, kind of childlike. I sent him a message last night, and he sent me a message back with a dancing potato, which I think was some sort of reference to a spelling error that I made, but also to my Irishness. But so, you know, you've got to bear that in mind. Keep things light, keep things fun for him. And hopefully he's on the early stages of a really cool adventure.
I've texted you lots of memes over the years as well, but mine didn't seem to get such a positive response, Justin. Is he better prepared, or is his generation of kids better prepared in your mind than the prior generations of guys coming out of college, or in his case, high school?
I think physically, yes, 100%. You know, a lot of these guys have been doing some of the right things to make sure that their kind of their golfing development's moving in the right direction. Their coaching, I guess, even from a parental standpoint and from the guys at the golf clubs and girls at the golf clubs working with young players, they're so much better informed with the amount of information. And to be honest with you, I think that's where kind of we come in at this level. It's like, let's take all of this information that's helped to put you in a really good place, and let's start to filter and dilute some of it and make sure you're working on the right things and targeting things for yourself. I mean, the game of golf, I think the career is certainly lessening, or shortening, should I say, and the players we're seeing coming in, they are better prepared, and whether players are going to have as long careers as we see with somebody amazing like Bernhard Langer or Fred Couples, that we'll see in the future, whether that's the case. They hit the golf ball so much further, so much harder. They hit more golf balls. They put more time in the gym. So it's an interesting time.
You know, Justin, when I met Blades in Mexico, he hopped over the gallery rope during a practice round, and I was struck by his athleticism. It made me a little bit nervous, but he landed softly, almost like a gymnast. And it made me think, what kind of athlete is he? Because that was kind of a very athletic move, a difficult move, and he made it look very easy, just hopping over this gallery rope and shaking my hand.
Yeah, as I say, his mom, Rhonda, was an incredible basketball player. I think she was the first WNBA player to score a three-pointer, I think. My knowledge of that isn't what it should be. But, you know, a very, you know, well-balanced athlete, I would say, strong in his legs, does all the right things, but seems to be doing all the right things with a certain level of real, like, genuine, childlike enjoyment for it. You know, I heard a little a little piece on Instagram before we came on, and he's enjoying the crowds on the Corn Ferry. He's enjoying the courses. He's enjoying the scoring. He's enjoying the playing part. He's enjoying having a caddy. So he's really he's just mesmerized and living the dream. And if we can continue to put performances up like he did in Texas, he'll hopefully get playing privileges, and that's really our big goal for him, to make sure that he gets some playing privileges and gets himself to a point where he's playing week in and week out and really honing his craft.
This isn't the first time you've seen real talent in a young player up close, Justin. Rory McIlroy wasn't even a teenager when you were giving him free range balls at Blackwood Golf Centre in Northern Ireland, 25 years ago almost at this point. What did it feel like to see him go from that, when you knew him, to winning the Masters?
I was thrilled. You know, it's interesting seeing that journey, and from giving Jerry some big baskets of golf balls as they would come down and they would do some work in the winter, and facilitating the practice that Rory came out to Dubai in the winters with Michael Bannon, and they would work at some of the facilities that I was, to see him complete that journey, there were a few tears in our eyes. We'd seen him go through a lot in the last few years trying to, complete what I think we would all agree, he possibly should have done a little bit sooner with his raw ability. But to see him do it, it happens for them at different times. We were all thrilled for him.
Speaking of raw ability, one of my favorite parts of this season so far is seeing Aldrich Pottgieter hit a driver up close. I asked him after one of his rounds, I said, where do you get your power from? And he said, well, I think it's because I grew up playing rugby. What's it like for you to work with a player who's so young, so talented, who hits the ball an absolute country mile?
Again, it's a challenge. You know, once they get up over that 184, 185 mile an hour ball speed, there's a lot of difficulties with gapping golf clubs. They're harder to caddy for. The equipment takes a real, heavy knock. And he's an incredible player. He's had some success early on this season. And, he's in a situation where we're really just trying to get him to kind of regroup, start to extract things that he knows helped him to perform, and let him kind of find his way. Because it's kind of easy for us all to think that when we see these young players playing so well, but when they start having little dips and things, again, they can go back into that tank of information. So, trying to keep things simple for these guys and let them play their own game. But, he is a combination of so many great things. He's got a strong grip. He's got a strong club face. He's got an incredibly strong engine from his rugby and his wrestling. He's fast. He's got great posture. He's got great rotation. And I certainly wouldn't want to get in the way of one of his tee shots.
There's a couple of other South Africans you've worked with for quite some time, Justin, Brandon Grace, Louis Oosthuizen, both playing on LIV now. Do you get any sense those guys are paying much attention or monitoring the prospects for any deal between the Public Investment Fund and the PGA Tour, or are they just kind of going about their business?
I think it's interesting, the Stinger team that Louis and Brandon play for, I mean, that really commands an awful lot of their time and attention. Louis's the captain of the team. They're working with a lot of companies with apparel, and down in South Africa, the thing seems to be growing arms and legs a little bit. So I wouldn't say there's a great sense of that. I know that from both of those guys, there's a nostalgia too, and they miss a lot of the players that they kind of, let's say, cut their teeth playing with out on the PGA Tour, and they miss a lot of the great events that they played on the PGA Tour. I wouldn't say that there's too much going on in the back burner in terms of when's a deal happening, what's going on. I think they're busy with their travel, they're busy with their preparation, and they're trying to make sure that they put their best foot forward from a golf perspective.
Justin, it's always great to catch up with you. And if you are interested in reapplying for your former position, I am accepting applications at the moment, but I warn you, it's a very competitive position and not very well paid.
A long list. Thanks, fellas.